Thank you. Be seated. The court is ready to hear argument for petitioner D. Houston Incorporated versus Love.
May it please the court. In 1987, the Texas legislature enacted the Dram Shop Act, which is a strong, effective, clear, and succinct piece of legislation which is aimed at deterring commercial alcohol providers from serving or providing alcohol to intoxicated persons. Today, respondent Melissa Love seeks to undermine that legislation by asking this court to find exceptions to the Dram Shop Act, which the Texas legislature never intended and which this court has never recognized. In the trial court, there were two motions for summary judgment. The first motion for summary judgment was a partial motion for summary judgment, which was granted on the safe harbor or trained server exclusion of the Dram Shop Act. The second summary judgment, the final summary judgment, that disposed of the other issues, is the issue that's before the court today. In that summary judgment, the trial court found that
there's no more complaint about the Dram Shop Act.
There's no more complaint about the Dram Shop Act other than whether it is actually the exclusive cause of action for a commercial provider providing alcohol to an intoxicated person. There are two issues set out by the appellate court, but really they are really the two sides of the same coin. The first issue is the Dram Shop Act the exclusive cause of action? And the second one is, based on Otis Engineering, whether there can be another common law cause of action recognized for employers and extended, in this case, to independent contractors, in light of the fact that there is the Dram Shop Act, which claims to be the exclusive cause of action regarding commercial providers' provision of alcohol.
What if Love was an employee, indisputably?
If Ms. Love was an employee, indisputably, the court would have a different question before it.
And that's the question I'm asking.
Yes.
Would there be an Otis duty there?
Arguably not. Otis was decided 4 years before the Dram Shop Act was enacted. Otis has only been extended in an alcohol case one time since then, and it's been in the Spruill case. And that case also didn't, or in that case, it did not involve a commercial alcohol provider.
Well, let me ask you this. What if Ms. Love was an employee, and she showed up, and she showed up drunk to work, and Treasurers did not serve her, but she showed up drunk? Would they have any duty then?
According to the Verdure versus King hospitality case out of the Fort Worth Court of Appeals, Treasurers would not have a duty to her. In that case, the court found that an employer who sent an intoxicated employee home, who later was in a one-car collision and was killed in that accident, did not have a duty to protect her from that harm to herself. And that would be the situation we would be under.
But they would have had a duty to someone else that she had hurt.
Yes, under
Otis. That presents a bit of a different question.
It's not a different question in the fact that, in this case, Ms. Love was the person.
No, I understand that. But let's say she had collided with someone else and injured someone else.
Then possibly, yes, there would be a duty.
So then the Dram Shop would not be the exclusive remedy there. In fact, it would not be a remedy in that situation because they were not the provider.
I don't agree, because the Dram Shop Act was enacted after the Otis case came out. But there would be room for this court to more clearly and easily extend Otis in that situation than in this case, which involves a commercial provider and a first party who was injured as opposed to an innocent third party, which is what's been required in Otis.
Let's talk for a second about the independent contractor employee distinction. Both parties have agreed this person was an independent contractor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Are we bound by that?
That she's an independent contractor?
No. Is that a legal stipulation or factual?
I'm not sure of the difference, Your Honor. It's a factual stipulation, and there's not been any evidence to the contrary or any argument from the trial court on as to whether
why,
she...
Why was it... I'm a little vague in the record. I guess you all didn't disagree about it. And why this person is an independent contractor?
There was an actual contract signed when Ms. Love was hired as an entertainer at Treasurers, in which it says she is an independent contractor.
Well, I understand that, but people could say that all the time. I mean, did she have complete artistic freedom?
Yes, Your Honor. Within the reins of the penal code, yes. She was able to choose what days she wanted to come to work, whether she wanted to come to work on a particular day. Unlike an employee who is a waitress who has a particular schedule and has to work a particular shift, an independent contractor, entertainer at this club could come to work when she chose to.
Did she choose whether or not to drink on the job?
Yes, Your Honor.
Was she encouraged to do so?
There is evidence that she was encouraged to do so.
Well, we talk about that evidence a little bit. What was the encouragement precisely?
There's a manual that is given to the entertainers at the time that they are applying for employment or for the ability to dance or work at the club. And in it, it explains that the business of the nightclub is the sale of alcohol and that the entertainers are encouraged to drink and to encourage the customers to consume alcohol while at the bar.
Is there anything in the record about whether there's a watered-down? I mean, there's a distinction in drinks that certain people get.
There's deposition testimony, which I believe is in the record between pages 56 and 66, that discusses that she doesn't have to drink, but that if she's drinking, that she would be getting the same type of alcohol beverage that a customer would.
What benefit is it to the dancer to drink?
It's a choice.
So the encouragement is solely for the profitability of the company and has nothing to do with the dancer's compensation?
It has nothing to do with the dancer's compensation. It's a choice on the part of the company or on the part of the dancer, and it is also, as you were saying, part of the club's profit, but so would the sale of a Coca-Cola or a non-alcoholic beverage, which is also available to the dancer if she chose to drink that instead.
And one other probably irrelevant question, does she get any salary while she's on this role as an independent contractor?
She's paid per dance that she does for a customer, but there's no, like with a waitress, they're given a shift pay plus tips. And with an independent contractor entertainer, there's no salary or compensation from the club other than what she makes from the customer at the club.
That's what I meant. Her pay comes solely from the customer.
Solely from the customer. And she is required to pay the club for the ability to work there on the nights that she shows up for dance, which is another factor that goes into the independent contractor versus the
employee. Does she receive any benefits?
Not in her role as an independent contractor. Ms. Love did work as an employee for the club as a waitress also on a different shift, and I don't know whether she received any benefits from the club for
that. If she ever paid for her own drinks, would she be a customer for purposes of the dram shop?
Yes, Your Honor, and regardless of whether she was paying for her own drinks under the Dram Shop Act, she would be considered a customer.
And it's no longer a live issue whether the fact that another customer buys a drink for her makes her a customer or not, so we don't have to worry about that.
Because it wasn't preserved below. Correct.
Would you say that again?
About
it. Seems to be the relationship with this particular person as an independent contractor or customer in answer to the Chief's first question. What was your answer?
That she would be considered a customer regardless of whether she was purchasing the drinks. For the purposes of the Dram Shop Act, the liability attaches for the provision of the alcohol to any person. And the administrative code...
Well, but it defines person as customer, member, or guest of the club.
The first sentence of Chapter 2.02 refers to the club's or the provider's liability for customers, members, or guests, which Treasurers would contend is not a definition of who the Act applies to, because later in that same provision it refers to the Dram Shop Act being the exclusive remedy for provision of alcohol to any person over 18 years of age. This Court has never required there to be any proof of a person's eligibility or standing under the Dram Shop Act other than that there be a commercial provider and that the person who alcohol was provided to be a person over 18 years of age.
So in your view then, even though she's an independent contractor dancer, because she received drinks during the course of her dancing, she is a person over the age of 18 who's been provided alcohol by the club, so she's covered by the Dram Shop Act. Is that your...
Any cause of action that she would be able to bring would have to come under the Dram Shop Act.
If this was one of these BYOB clubs, a are necessary in the light of Rehnquist's opinion back when I was in law school. Don't hold me to the name. The whole Otis panoply could apply, could it not? If she got alcohol while she was there, either she smuggled it on or it was given to her so that she could be more artistically uninhibited.
I think that would depend on some other facts of the case, and the factors that would be significant would be whether the location would be considered a commercial alcohol provider, whether she would have a relationship.
But if they weren't selling, if they don't have a liquor license, they're not going to be a commercial alcohol provider.
Correct. And then the other issue would be what her relationship was with the club. And in this case, it's independent contractor, and this court has never extended the Otis duty to the independent contractor relationship in a commercial alcohol case.
But you don't see any problem or policy problem with keeping the Otis authority in place and saying that you can be a provider and an employer if this were an employee. I mean, what's wrong with that? If the relationship is not as provider but as employer, then the exclusivity provision of the dram shop seems to implicate if you're a provider, you're liable exclusively as a provider. The sole remedy against a provider is the dram shop act, but that doesn't preclude liability against an employer if there's an employee. I mean, can you come up with a policy reason as to why we should just apply dram shop if the employer is acting as an employer rather than a provider?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that you get into a real slippery slope on how far you're going to get extended into other types of causes of action that could be brought against commercial alcohol providers if you would allow the Otis duty to an employee. I think that there are particular facts in Otis, and if it's limited to its particular facts, it can stand in the face of the Dram Shop Act. But if the court gets too far away from the particulars of Otis, I think that there are some major dangers. And one of them is the liability of the employer in that situation would be premised on something other than the provision of alcohol, because the Dram Shop Act clearly is the exclusive remedy for the provision of alcohol.
And that's how I qualified my question. But if the liability was other than by providing.
But then you get into an entire range of possibilities of the types of actions that could be considered liability as opposed to just the provision of alcohol. And
why
what would keep...
the whole world, I mean, from a law firm to a manufacturing company to Goodwill, be liable for its employees if they drink and go out and something happens on the road, we pass over the first party, third party problem. Why should they be liable for that and this type of an establishment with a liquor license be exempted? What would make us think the legislature was ever even thinking about that type of situation when they wrote this act?
Well, according
to... And they said this industry should not have a duty that the rest of the world has.
And your question refers to why the commercial alcohol providers wouldn't have a duty that the
right.
rest
I mean,
of the world
when
has?
This was written, this was an extension. I mean, as they were working on the bill, Poole intervenes, but as they were working on a bill, this is an extension of the law to make these people liable in an area where it wasn't clear that they had any duty before. Now, why would we interpret that to say, all right, we have an Otis duty for everybody in the whole world, except if your job is selling alcohol, then you're totally exempt from an Otis duty.
You have an Otis duty to everybody in the whole world.
I mean, every other person in the world.
Who's an employer.
Who's an employer, except maybe the state of Texas or something, has this Otis duty. But somebody who's selling alcohol, because we're going to extend a new duty to people who are selling alcohol, at the same time we're going to exempt them from an Otis duty. Does that make any sense?
It does make sense. First of all, the Otis duty predates the Dram Shop Act. And I would contend that there's an argument that the Dram Shop Act regarding commercial alcohol providers would exclude the Otis duty from those commercial alcohol providers.
I understand your argument on the language, on the use of the word person, but is there any policy argument about why the legislature, knowing the Otis duty, would say, well, let's be sure and write this act to make sure that these people don't have this Otis duty. We're going to give them a new separate duty to other people instead.
Yes, Your Honor, and it goes to the purpose of the Dram Shop Act. The Dram Shop Act is very effective in what it does, and it's because of the scheme that's been adopted by the legislature. It's got a carrot and a stick approach. It gives the commercial alcohol provider the possibility of very high liability for breaching the duty that it's given in the act. But on the other hand, it has an out. If it takes steps that have been proven to be effective by training its servers, having there be the specter of civil liability for the servers themselves for violating the act.
But that's vis-a-vis a customer and not an employee.
Well, let's not get too far off this track, I'm sorry. On the Otis duty, suppose the employee shows up at the alcohol provider's establishment drunk, and the alcohol provider establishment doesn't provide them alcohol. They're drunk, they know they're impaired, they send them home, and they have an accident. Isn't that the Otis issue? You have someone who's obviously impaired, and the employer sends them home or does something, takes some sort of control of the employee's activity.
It's the affirmative action.
So there has not been the provision of alcohol.
Correct.
Now, are you saying that just because they're in the business of selling alcohol, they're exempted from any liability for having sent a drunk employee home, even though that employee did not imbibe any alcohol on the premises?
I'm saying that, yes, that can be the case, but that's not the issue in this case here.
Well, let's assume that the dram shop applies if your cause of action is providing alcohol. There's no providing alcohol here. We simply have an employer who sends a drunk employee home. That's Otis.
Yes.
Right? Okay. Under those circumstances, in this case, is there any evidence out there that the employer was aware that the employee was incapacitated and, in spite of that, sent the employee home?
In this case. The only evidence there is her blood alcohol level after the accident, which is a 0.225. According to Ms. Love's own testimony, which is part of the record, she was not exhibiting signs of intoxication while she was at the club.
And she was not, in fact, sent home by the employer.
She was not, in fact, sent home by the employer.
Her term was up, and she just left.
Yes.
I thought there was evidence that blood alcohol level a person with that level of intoxication would exhibit signs of intoxication. Is that right?
You are correct. There was a doctor's affidavit that said at that level she would likely exhibit signs of intoxication.
But didn't her testimony or the manager's testimony that none of those symptoms were observed by him when she left?
That's correct.
So do we have a fact issue?
Yes, there would be a fact issue based on her blood alcohol level and the
controverting manager
affidavit that says that...
Is that relevant to what the Court of Appeals held?
It is not relevant, Your Honor, because of the exclusivity of the Dram Shop Act in this situation and the fact that Otis has not been extended to independent contractors and should not be extended in this case because she was an independent contractor, not an employee, and there was no affirmative act of control in this case, as there was in
Otis. So your view is because there's no disagreement that she's an independent contractor, Otis doesn't apply?
Our first argument is the Dram Shop Act, which came after Otis, means what it says, and it's the exclusive remedy. And the court, there's no argument with the trial courts granting the summary judgment on that. But in the alternative, Otis would not apply in this case because it's distinguishable in several factors, one of which is that she's an independent contractor.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May I please the court? Mr. Chapin will present argument from the respondent.
So, Mr. Chapin, you've abandoned the statutory cause of action. Is that right?
Yes.
Why should Otis be extended to an independent contractor?
Your Honor, as some of the questions previously addressed got at the point, the duty when a special relationship exists between an employer and an employee and with the employer independent contractor, a duty exists for the employer to exercise reasonable care. The Spruill Court, in its decision, stated that even when the employer is the provider of alcoholic beverages, the duty still exists because for the dram shop...
Well, there was a fact question as to whether the employer provided alcoholic beverages there.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I believe Spruill, there was a fact question as to whether the employer was the provider.
Yes, that's true. What we have, though, is that the situation that triggers the Dram Shop Act is the providing of the alcoholic beverages. When you have a special relationship between an independent contractor and the employer, or the employee and the independent contractor, what triggers the duty in the employer-employee context is the exercise of control over the incapacitated employee. In the independent contractor context, it's the retention of the right of control over some particular aspect of the job.
Well, what evidence is there in this case that Treasures retained the right of control over her activities as a dancer?
The evidence is, Your Honor, that they exercised the right of constant supervision. They told the dancers that if they became, they encouraged them to drink alcohol at work, and then they said that they would, if they became, in Treasure's estimation, too intoxicated to continue working, that they would remove them from.
Well, I understand that they have a policy that says exactly what happens if an independent contractor dancer becomes alcoholically impaired and incapacitated. Okay. But the only evidence that there at the time she left is that she did not appear, so they never invoked the policy.
But in the...
In other words, they would exercise no control to implement that policy unless and until she was obviously intoxicated.
Well, there is the evidence that 3 hours after she left work...
I'm saying that that's where the fact question comes, yes. If you extend Otis to this set of facts.
Yes, that's true.
But would you say that only unless until she's visibly intoxicated does the duty arise?
That would be under an employer-employee context.
The duty exists because of that relationship.
Right. Well, but in the employer-independent contractor relationship, it's simply the retention of the right. And so, therefore...
Well, what right did Treasures retain?
It retained the right to control whether she used her own property to drive home. It controlled the right whether she could continue to work.
But then don't you use those elements as indicia of employee status? And haven't you conceded that by saying she's an independent contractor?
No, Your Honor.
I mean, the retention of control or the exercise of control indicates an employer-employee relationship.
To determine whether, yes, that's true.
And by definition, if someone is an independent contractor, there is no right of control or retention of control. Because if there is, then they're an employee.
Well, Your Honor, as this court has stated in Perch-Selenese, the duty on the that is generated on the part of the employer in the independent contractor context, the duty is commensurate with the amount of retained control. And that's what I'm getting at when I was answering that. The retained control they had was they retained the right to constantly supervise so that they could determine if the independent contractor was too intoxicated. They retained the right to prevent them from using their own property, which was their vehicle. Prevented them from being able to continue drinking. I mean, they retained this right of control, and that is what triggers the duty, and that's what I believe the court was getting.
What's my question? When do all those rights of control arise?
I'm sorry, I misunderstood it in the beginning. Well, yes, when the peril has been created. And so I guess that would arise when she was intoxicated.
Okay, so, even if... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
So if I understand that, then no duty exists until this independent contractor is obviously intoxicated.
Um, would say that if there's a fact question as to whether she's intoxicated.
The legal question. No duty arises until the independent contractor is obviously intoxicated.
Yes, that's true.
The next part is the factual thing, whether the evidence shows she was obviously intoxicated, whereby Treasurer should have implemented its control policy.
Okay, and that there's a dispute.
So it's not a pre-existing duty, it's one that's dependent on finding this fact.
Yes, that's true, Your Honor. Yes.
Let's assume the Dram Shop Act does not preclude this action. We must presume Otis can be extended to an independent contractor relationship in some circumstances, even though we've never done it before. And I don't think a Court of Appeals has either. Okay, now let's get to the third question. So can the Otis duty extend to a first-party claim, or should it? And I know there's one Court of Appeals passed on.
Yes, that was the Sproul case. Well, Your Honor, yes, simply because using the risk utility test in determining whether a duty should exist, if the person is intoxicated, and whether it's an employee or whether it's an independent contractor, and there's some exercise of control, and through a breach of the duty, you allow them to get out into the public on the public street and drive. If the duty covers only the persons to whom that intoxicated person may end up injuring, that still leaves out the situation of the person, protection of the person themselves. If you have a policy saying that we'll protect you.
The law in Texas, I think, was always pretty clear. Maybe it's just clear because nobody brought the suits, but at least in treatises, they were fairly clear that intoxication was an assumption of the risk, which in modern terms we would say it was contributory negligence. And we rather reluctantly, in a case interpreting the Dram Shop Act, because it mentioned protecting that person or others, based on the language of the Act, we allowed the young man to bring a suit when he got drunk at a similar joint to this one and ran into a telephone pole. But there's quite a bit of difference when we talk about, it seems to me when we talk about the common law, whether or not it's good public policy to extend that, because there's going to be a contributory negligence submission in this suit if you ever get it to a jury, and whether the public policy should say, well, if you run, it's quite a bit different thing, Otis, or in a Dram Shop. Let's take Otis. Get this. We've already settled this. It's quite a different thing in Otis to say, if you get drunk and run into somebody and they get hurt, that they should be limited to your 2040 auto policy when somebody else has put them in a situation. And it's a different thing to talk about the individual themselves, who clearly has some responsibility, particularly an independent contractor more than an employee, although we don't need to get into that for this question. Why should we extend that statutory scheme that we were very reluctant to do to a common law issue where it's our call whether or not this duty should go to first parties as well as third parties?
Well, if you don't extend the duty to the person the server to the person themselves, then what you get into is a situation like this case where if the employer were the server of alcoholic beverages, then what they could do is have a policy that required the person to drink at work, and they could set quotas on how many drinks you have to have at the end of your shift or each hour with particular customers, and they could allow, and the
They wouldn't be an independent contractor.
I'm sorry.
They probably wouldn't be an independent contractor at that stage of specificity.
I guess that's true. But even that is true. Even if, though, taking it back into getting it back to the employer-employee context, even if the employer is the server of alcoholic beverages, then no matter how many drinks they serve to the person, then if the person injured only themselves, the employer could hide behind that. It could say, sure, I served him 10 shots in 15 minutes, but he only injured himself. I don't have a duty here. That would seem to be...
But you would have a dram shop cause of action. You would still have a dram shop cause of action.
If it was a employee, my argument would be that there would be no dram shop application.
Why is that?
Because as the dram shop states clearly, it applies only to the persons who become the customers, members, or guests who are or become intoxicated. So if in addressing this question, if it was the employee who became intoxicated, they're not a customer, member, or guest by any common definition.
But that sentence in the statute talks about when the provider is going to be liable for certain people's actions. The liability of providers under this chapter for the actions of their customers, members, or guests who are or become intoxicated is in lieu of common law.
Yes, and Your Honor.
So why wouldn't, I don't understand why that has anything to do. Clearly they're a provider of alcohol under the definition of Section 201.
Yes.
And she was provided alcohol, so why wouldn't she have a cause of action under 2.02? Isn't that the remedy that's available to her?
Well, why wouldn't she have a cause of action under the Dram Shop Act? Well, she might have a cause of action under the Dram Shop Act if she could provide evidence that they served her alcoholic beverages.
Okay, I guess I was interested in what you were saying in response to Justice Owens' question. She didn't have to be a customer in order to have a Dram Shop Act claim, did she?
No, that's true.
Okay.
Did you give up your Dram Shop Act claim case because you didn't think she fell within the category of permissible plaintiffs or because you thought they could prove a safe harbor as a matter of law?
We gave it up, Your Honor, because there was no evidence that they had provided her alcoholic beverages when she was visibly intoxicated to the point she presented a danger to herself or others.
But yet you say there's a fact issue by the time she left that she was visibly intoxicated.
Yes. The issue wasn't whether or not she was intoxicated. It was just whether there was evidence that they had served her when she was in that state.
With an ordinary customer, does a place like Treasures have the right to restrict access to an automobile to a customer that they might believe is consumed too much alcohol?
They don't have a duty to that person. That's where we get into the difference here.
Under the manual in this case, does Treasurers have the right to prohibit a dancer from driving her automobile? Huh?
Yes, they have retained the right to prevent someone, a dancer, from driving home if they're in their determination she's become too intoxicated. With the normal customer, they wouldn't have any legal position to retain that right because there's no special relationship.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood. They don't have an agreement with the dancer that they can take the car keys away. You're just arguing that there is, quote, a special relationship between a contractor and an independent contractor that gives the right to the contractor to withhold the ability.
There's both. There is a policy. The dancers know that the club has retained that right. So they know if they become too intoxicated that the club has, it's the club's policy to protect them and take their car keys away.
Is that in a written policy, or where is it in the evidence?
That, I don't believe, is written policy. That is stated club policy. That was the club manager's testimony.
And that's in this record?
Yes.
And it's largely uncontested, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. There was no contest to that. If I may, Justice Phillips, your initial question previously, I don't want to take this or to change the issue here in any way, but as to the stipulation to an independent contractor, the determination of legal status of independent contractor or employee is a legal issue and a ruling of law for the court, and so that would be a legal stipulation, and as it were, I don't believe this court would be necessarily be bound.
I don't either, but can you give us any persuasive argument that she's an employee? Sounds like she gets closer to an employee once she gets drunk, but up until that time.
They do retain a right that whenever those particular independent contractors or those particular people report to work, the time that they report, if they get there before a certain time, they don't have to pay a fee to work. They get there between certain hours, they have to pay $20, and then they get there.
There's no way that's no indicia of an employment relationship. I mean, just saying I'm going to pay you more for working a certain hour than another.
Well, the employee has to pay that.
I understand.
Okay. And then if the the dancer is entertaining a customer and there is a credit card tab, which that same written manual encourages them to put things on a credit card, the club gets a cut out of everything that is normally the dancer's fee, whether it be a dance or drinks or tip or anything such as that. The club gets a cut out of that, and that's testimony by the manager in the record. And so they retain that that right over the to control the person that way. And then there's we get into the control as they that relates to intoxication.
But you're not withdrawing your stipulation, or you are?
I haven't withdrawn. No, Your Honor, I'm not withdrawing.
He's saying it's irrelevant.
It doesn't hurt if you want to give us your time back.
I'm sorry?
It doesn't hurt if you want to give us your time back.
Your Honor, I think I've addressed about everything I was here to address.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. This court doesn't have to disregard Otis in order to reverse the Court of Appeals in this case, because Otis can still stand on its facts, which are very distinguishable from the facts of this case. Otis can stand in cases where we have a non-commercial provider of alcohol or another type of employer, where there is an employee-employer relationship, which is as far as that case has been extended, where we're dealing with injuries to third parties as opposed to a first-party injury like we're dealing with in this case.
Well, supposing
that there's no the public, until we get to that third point, the public's policy isn't stronger to hold somebody that's just having a barbecue liable than it is someone who encourages these people it's paying to drink, and to drink heartily and at the same rate as paying customers.
Yes and no, Your Honor. I would say that there's two answers to that. First of all, the affirmative act of control is significant, which was the fourth reason situation I was going to say where Otis can still stand. Otis depends on an affirmative act of control as opposed to nonfeasance or letting something go.
But you concede here, because you have to, since the fact is raised, that this club had control procedures that kicked in at this point.
I would argue, Your Honor, that the control procedures that were discussed in Ms. Love's deposition that are part of the record are no different than the control procedures that the club would take over any person that was in the club who had had too much to drink or that they perceived had too much to drink, which would be to call a taxi for them, to try to get them to stay and not drive home, to try to get their keys so that they wouldn't drive. Those were basic safety issues that had nothing to do with their relationship with Ms. Love over any
but
other
that's
person
not in the record.
That would come into her bar.
What,
no.
Well, that's not the, what no. the record does say is they did it specifically with respect to the dancers.
Regarding the dancers, that they did retain this. And what I'm saying is that I would argue that that's no more than just a safety
so
precaution
think,
that they would take for any.
So you think treasurers would have the right to seize somebody's automobile, a customer's automobile, or seize their keys?
There's no evidence that they have the right to seize her automobile or keys. The evidence is that if they noticed that a dancer was intoxicated, that they would try to get her keys, try to call her a cab, try to get her to remove her from the floor, would be get her off of the dance floor, would be the thing that they retained the right to actually do. But whether they could actually take her keys, there's no evidence where they say, we retain the right. There's no, we talked earlier about the pamphlet that they fill out and the procedures. There's nothing in there that says, we retain the right to do this. There's just deposition testimony from the manager who says, if this happens and she becomes intoxicated, we try to call a cab. We try. These are the things, this is what our policy is about handling a situation where someone is intoxicated. A danger that we get into with the problem of not living up to that policy the way that one would argue that they should would be that they become penalized for having a party to protect the public and the dancers from the harm of intoxication, whereas some less responsible alcohol provider could just have no policy on the issue and perhaps avoid responsibility. So that's a policy argument why treasurers should not be held more responsible because it has a policy to keep the dancer from getting on the road when she is intoxicated, just like it would for any other person that was in there. But the affirmative act of control is what that addresses right there, and that is a significant factor in Otis that's not present in this case. In this case,
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I thought in answer to one of the questions, it was undisputed that the policy of the club that the dancers were aware of is the club would take their car keys if they were too intoxicated to drive. And is that not, am I mistaken about what I understood?
My reading of the record is that the deposition testimony of the manager is that the club retains the right to take the dancer off the floor, try to get their car keys, try to put them in the dressing room away from the customers to try to let them no longer be intoxicated. That's our reading, my reading of the record. And I do not believe that there's anything in the materials setting out the relationship between the club and the dancer that addresses that issue. So Otis can still stand in the face of this case if the court reverses the Court of Appeals in this case, and Treasurers argues that Court should reverse the Court of Appeals because the opinion of the Court of Appeals is in contradiction to the Dram Shop Act. It extends Otis where no court has extended Otis, and the circumstances of this case don't justify it, and that it would be bad public policy because it would undermine the purpose of the Dram Shop Act, and it would open the door to other litigation for other types of lawsuits not involving provision of alcohol but failure to properly supervise people that were in a club that are not necessary under the facts of this case.
Any other questions?
Thank you, counsel. That concludes the arguments before the court today. All of these cases will be submitted on briefs and oral arguments, and the marshal will now adjourn the court.
All rise. Oh, yeah. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned.